Well, good evening, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Friday Night Live on this year, 7th of November, 2025. And of course, I'm thrilled, happy, overjoyed, and ecstatic, almost orgasmic, but I'm a married man, to take your questions and comments. While I wait for those to come flooding in, I'm happy to take them in text. I'm happy to take them through voice. But someone's posted, so there's a guy named JD, obviously not Vance, posted the stats on X that the effect feminism has on women. And this is what he said. Women's self-reported happiness down 83% since 1970. Female suicide rate up 50% since 2000. Antidepressant use among women up 250% since 1990. Single motherhood up 700% since 1960 and follows the usual IQ bands, right? East Asians least, whites more, Hispanics more, blacks most. One in four women is on anxiety meds. Female workforce participation up 75%, but life satisfaction down 200%. 200%? Sure, quite. Oh, yeah. College women report record loneliness and depression. 40% of women have engaged in self-harm, ranging from cutting to suicide to watching Jennifer Welsh. One of those may be invented. And he wrote, your wildest dreams have come true. You can vote for and be, you can vote and be promiscuous, and you're unshackled from a man to take care of you and children to adore you. Congratulations, you win. Yay, feminism. So, a reasonable question to ask, what is this? Well, he said women's self-reported happiness down 83% since 1970. It was tough to corroborate this claim. I'm not saying it's not true. We just couldn't corroborate it. Women's self-reported happiness has declined in some studies, but the decline is modest, unlike a lot of modern women, with other studies showing overall increases but declines relative to men's happiness. So using the General Social Survey, GSS data from 72 to 2006, women's probability of reporting being very happy fell by about 5 percentage points from about 36% in the early 1970s to 31% by the mid-2000s, while men remained stable at around 30%. So this is an absolute decline of about 14%. The gender happiness gap, where women historically reported higher happiness than men, reversed over this period. A separate analysis of GSS data, this is 1972 to 2014, shows mixed trends, with women's very happy responses averaging 34% over the period, but showing no dramatic drop. 29.7% in 1972 versus 33% in 2014, a slight increase. Marital happiness and other measures declined by about 4 percentage points in recent years. Eurobarometer data from Europe from 1973 to 2002 confirms a similar pattern. Women's life satisfaction rose slightly in absolute terms but declined relative to men by about 0.2 points on a standardized index, of about a 5 to 10% relative shift in the gender gap. Other data sets, such as the Virginia Slims poll and a cigarette, and Monitoring the Future, show consistent relative declines for women, pervasive across age, race, education, marital status, and employment groups. For instance, one estimate equates the overall U.S. decline to a 0.13 point drop on a happiness index, about 1/8 of a standard deviation. So it compares to the well-being impact of 8.5% rise in unemployment. We did hunt and search where this 83% figure might have come from, but couldn't find it. So we did discover that women's self-reported happiness varies significantly when splitting out by marriage and children. The three categories were very happy, pretty happy, and not very happy, though only very happy was available to us. So a very happy marital parental status, married with children, 40% very happy. Married without children, 25% happy. Unmarried without children, 22% happy, very happy. And unmarried with children is 17% very happy, right? So you go 40 married with children, 25 married without children, unmarried without children, 22%, 17% married with children. Now, you know, the guy's talking about 83% decline in happiness. So 83% of unmarried with unmarried women with children are not very happy, but I wouldn't say that that's equivalent to an 83% decline in self-reported happiness as a whole. Across nearly 50 years of GSS data, 1972 to the present, married individuals are about 30 percentage points more likely to report higher happiness than unmarried ones. This gap persists even after controlling for income, education, and other factors. Similar for both men and women, though women's overall happiness has declined slightly in recent decades. Now, cause and effect. Some people would say, well, it's not that married people are happier, it's that happy people are more likely to get married. Except, of course, in the past, just about everyone got married. Just about everyone got married. So it's not just that. On the GSS's average happiness score, scaled 1 to 3, married respondents score around 3.3, unmarried ones about 1.8, difference about 1.5 points. So, sorry, that's a little bit confusing. James, if you can clear that up for me, I'd appreciate that. It says the happiness score is scaled 1 to 3. So how can you get a 3.3? Maybe it's 1 to 4, or maybe it's 1 to 3, including almost up to 4 or something like that. But I don't see how a scale from 1 to 3 can have married respondents score about 3.3. So if you can check that out, I'd appreciate that. The boost in happiness due to marriage is comparable for women and men. A 2020 analysis of U.S. data from the World Value Survey and other sources found that marital status has a stronger positive impact on women's happiness than men's. Logistic regression models showed that being married increases the odds of reporting high happiness by 2.66 times for women versus 2.38 times for men. That's really good, big data, after adjusting for education, income, employment, and other variables. The gender difference was statistically significant, suggesting marriage may provide greater emotional or societal benefits for women. Broader trends indicate that marital status is a stronger predictor of well-being than education, race, age, or gender itself. However, the overall declines in women's happiness since the 1970s may partly stem from rising rates of singlehood and delayed marriage. So, I mean, I wrote this on X. Women need men to regulate their emotional states because men tend to be a little bit more emotionally stable. I mean, not for reasons of virtue, but, you know, don't have the periods, the hormones, the fluctuations, and so on. And menopause, of course, which for some women can go on for a long time, indeed. So, men need women to maintain sort of social ties, build community, and so on. And women need men to help regulate their emotional ups and downs. There's lots of women, you can see them posting all the time on social media, who said, you know, after spending a weekend with my boyfriend, I'm just so relaxed, I'm so even, right? Because we sand down some of the highs and lows. And of course, sorry to be blunt, but of course, human male semen contains literal antidepressants for women. So the single women, you know, there's this under-effed sort of women meme, and it's a little crude, of course, it's quite crude. But there's some real truth in it, some biological truth in it. Men need over 20 orgasms a month for optimum health, particularly prostate health. I will never be prostate, but I'll take care of my prostate. But women need ejaculate in order to have their moods be better. So, of course, the table below. So, given the lower happiness of unmarried women relative to married women, it's worth asking how many women are married now versus 1970, as well as the average age of marriage. So, with children means currently living with children under the age of 18 in the same household. So, in the year 1970, marriage with children, 34%, married without children, 26%, unmarried with children, 4%, unmarried without children, 36%. And so, from the 1970 to 2023, married with children went from 34 to 17%, half. Married without children went a little bit up from 26 to 28%. This is the dinks, right? Double income, no kids. Unmarried with children went up 50% from 4 to 6%. and unmarried without children went from 36 to 49%. 49%. The above changes reflect rising rates of never married women from about 20% in 1970 to 32% in 2022. Increasing divorce / separation from about 5% to about 14%, so it's almost a tripling, and slightly decreasing widowhood from 12.8% to 8.3%. So we also looked into happiness when considering never, ever having had children considering never, ever had children versus never having had children. This is a thinner slice of the population as it measures women from the ages of 20 to 50. Having ever had children versus never having children. I'm so sorry. I think I got that one a little dyslexic. All right. So we're comparing women who've had children and women who've never had children. So this is ages 40 to 50. Unmarried here includes never married, divorcees, and widows. So married, having had children in 1970 was 81%, 2022, 54%. Married, having never had children from 4 to 6%. Unmarried, having had children, 8% to 28%. So that's more than triple, right? That's three and a half times, right? Yeah, 8, 16, 24 to 28, 3.5 times. Unmarried, having never had children, almost doubled from 7 to 12%. And of course, in 1970, women got married just under 21 years of age on average. The median age was 20.8 years in 2023. Go find yourself and have a bunch of hookups in college. The median age of getting married in 2023 is 28.4. So, of course, women are less happy overall. The proportions of the happiest women have declined, while the unhappiest women have increased in the realm of marriage and children. And this, of course, does produce a lot of, you know, cope and seethe, right? So female suicide rate up 50% since the year 2000. That's actually quite accurate, chillingly enough. 2000 to 2016 increase, the age-adjusted female suicide rate rose from 4 per 100,000 in 2000 to 6 in 2016. That is a 50% increase. Of course, it's still very rare, but there is still an increase. This outpaced the male increase, which was 21% over the same period, narrowing the gender ratio from 4.4 to 1 to 3.6 to 1. Suicide became the second leading cause of death for ages 10 to 34 and fourth for 35 to 54 by 2016. I assume that's for women. Extending to recent data, the female rate was 4 per 100,000 in 2000 and peaked at 6.2 in 2018, dipped to 5.3 in 2020. It could be because of COVID-19 data anomalies. And reached 5.9 in 2022 to 2023. That's about a 47.5% increase from 2000 to 2023, from 4 to 5.9. Now, overall, U.S. suicide rates increased 37% from 2000 to 2018 before a brief decline, returning to mere peak levels by 2022 to 2023. You know, and it's a funny thing, too, is that I don't have any data on this. It's just general life experience, not a proof, but in general, when people have external things to worry about, they tend to be less plagued by internal demons. Like sitting in a room, brooding and ruminating over all the mistakes in your life is going to go pretty badly when you are in the face of a worldwide death-dealing pandemic, at least as it was so described. I think it takes some relief out of your own negativity. So antidepressant use among women up 250% since 1990, with the inevitable caveat of saying, it's better. It's better diagnosis and better understanding and a reduced stigma. So we'll get into all of that, right? Overall, antidepressant use among both men and women has increased 400 to 500% from the 1990s to the 2010s. Women also use antidepressants 2 to 2.5 times more often than men. That is utterly fracked up. I just want to mention that. That is just absolutely, completely, and totally messed up, man. I mean, It's all these pills are supposed to fix mental health problems. So why are they getting worse and worse and worse? It would be like having antibiotics. Infections are going up. Insulin, death from diabetes is going up 400-500%. It's like, aren't they supposed to cure something? Man. The National Comorbidity Survey, called NCS 1990 to 1992, and NCS Replication 2001 to 2003, show overall 12-month antidepressant treatment prevalence rising from 2.2% to 10.1%, 359% increase. The trend was similar across demographics, including gender, with women using it at higher rates than men in both periods, though exact women-specific percentages are not broken out. Maybe women going for help with their mental health issues has something to do with why they commit suicide at a lower rate, although I'm not a fan of the SSRIs, to put it mildly. So the National Health and Nutrition Examination survey data on usage in the past 30 days for ages 12 plus increased nearly 400% from 1988 to 1994. Whew, that's wild. From about 2.2 to 3% to about 11%. Crazy. Women were 2.5 times more likely than men to use antidepressants, with rates reaching 23%, almost 1 in 4 women aged 40 to 59 on antidepressants. More recent data, 17.7% past 30-day use among adult women versus 8.4% for men, up from an estimated 3 to 4% for women in the early 1990s, based on consistent gender ratios of 2 to 2.5 to 1, 2 to 2.5 times as many women. So that's a 400 to 500% increase for women from 1990 to the late 2010. And women have gotten more and more of what they want as a whole, because they're the voting bloc that drives modern, quote, democracy. Office-based prescription data shows antidepressant prescribing rates per 100 population rising from 3.2 in 1990 to 4.8 in 1995, 50% increase, and then to about 10 in 2005. And about 300%. Just a little under 300%. Single motherhood has increased dramatically. It might not have got all the way to 700%. What are the key statistics? Again, is this the U.S.? 1960, approximately 5% of all U.S. births were to unmarried mothers in 1960. And of course, that's societal norms around marriage and family at the time. Without the welfare state and all of that, the parents had to police particularly their daughter's sexual activities, why you had the chaperones and door open at least 2 feet on the floor at all times, all that kind of stuff, right? As of 2023, we've gone from 5%, scorching, man, scorching, 40%, oof, 800% increase from 5% to 40%. Changing social norms, increased workforce participation among women, higher divorce rates, and delayed marriage. So how did it go from 5 to 40%? Well, 11% by 1970, 28% by 1990, around 40% by the 2010s. It's been fluctuating there, but no particular reversal. That's crazy. Now, I could have this, I think I've got this right, 5 to 4, it's not a 700, it's 800% increase. The only real issue with stating this is that births due to unmarried mothers does include women who are cohabitating, which may include those who get married and stay married. But, of course, the chance of parental separation when a child is born outside of marriage is 23% compared to 14% if you're married, with 36% of cohabitating couples separating without ever getting married. We did the recent show 6130 called The Truth About Marriage. But even if we set aside the eightfold increase above, the number of children living in single-parent households has tripled. Absolutely catastrophic. The proportion of children living in single-parent households, mostly headed by women, rose from about 9% in the 1960s to 28% by 2012, and around 25 to 27% in recent years. That's a 200 to 211% increase. The share of single-parent families as a percentage of all U.S. households tripled from about 4% in 1960 to 12 to 13% by the 2010s. 200 to 225% increase driven largely by single mothers. The absolute number of single mother families grew from around 3 million in 1960 to about 8 to 10 million in recent years. About 167 to 233% increase, that's adjusting for, of course, population growth. And of course, in the Black community, has been noted by a number of people, and we talked about it on this show for many, many years, in the Black community, children born out of wedlock is a 75% rate. Three out of every four Black children are born to single mothers. Okay, so the claim is women on anxiety meds, one in four. Half true. Anti-anxiety meds clock in at around 11% for women. However, antidepressants are often prescribed to treat anxiety, as are other things like benzodiazepines. The number of women who experience an anxiety disorder is close to one in four, with 35% of those diagnosed using medication. And of course, as we mentioned, 2 to 2.5 times women take antidepressants at higher rates than men. And certain subgroups of women, such as those in middle age and older, approach one in four. Now, I mean, this is hitting the wall, the post-wall, where you just can't get male attention. Maybe your jobs, you sort of have to come to terms or to grips with the limitations of your career. You know, maybe you're not going to be CEO, you're not going to be on the board, you're not going to be regional manager. And if you have, if all of that is cooking, then you're going to get depressed. If you're single, you've passed 40, you're not going to have kids. Most people's career blows chunks. Most people's career sucks. Most people do not have meaningful jobs. Lord knows I've had my share. But most people do not have meaningful jobs. And without a husband, without a children, as you age out of the dating market and you just can't get the hot, cool, exciting motorcycle riding rock-abbed guys that you could get when you were 22, you know, you're getting some older, you know, there's a huge flip, and it happens to women in their 40s. I talk about this in my last book, which is, by the way, available for subscribers at freedomain.com/donate. If you help out the show, I really would appreciate it. It's a lean month in November. But you can't get the cool guys. And there's a flip where guys your own age aren't interested in you because they're looking for younger women, particularly if they want to start a family. I mean, a 45-year-old guy is going to have to look for a woman in her early 30s to have a family. He's not looking for a woman in her 40s. And of course, if you became a single mother in your 20s, in your 40s, your kids are grown and out. And what do you got left? What do you got? And then what happens is, if you're 50, say, you can't get a guy who's 45, but a guy who's 65, well, he will date you because you are relatively young to him. So there's this kind of flip. You can get your own age and younger, and then there's just, it's amazing, you know, walking up the seesaw, right? And just teeter-totter, you just flip over, and it just happens like overnight. I've heard this from a number of women. It's like, oh, now only old guys are interested in me, and they're, you know, what do they want, nurses? So it's really kind of depressing. If you think that your 20s will continue forever, get ready for facefuls of SSRIs. All right. A 2011 Medco Health Solutions report, which analyzed prescription claims from 2.5 million insured Americans from 2001 to 2010, found that 25% of women were dispensed medication for a mental health condition overall, compared to 15% of men. For anti-anxiety medications specifically, the rate was lower, 11% among middle-aged women versus 5.7% for men, with women using them at nearly twice the rate as men. CDC data from 2020 shows 21.2% of women took prescription medication for mental health, including feelings of anxiety, depression, or other issues, compared to 11.5% of men. I don't know, they don't even call it manic depressive, they call it bipolar. I don't know if they still use lithium or antipsychotics, whatever it is, I don't know. So this includes, but is not limited to, anxiety meds. Updated 2023 CDC data reports 15.3% of women took medication specifically for depression, often overlapping with anxiety treatment, more than twice the rate for men. Now, women worry. I mean, it's a beautiful thing when they have babies and toddlers, right? Or little scurrying death magnets. 17, from 2015 to 2018, data indicates 17.7% of adult women used antidepressants in the past 30 days versus 8.4% for men. Rates highest among women age 60 plus at 24.3. Scorching. Antidepressants are commonly prescribed for anxiety disorders. Well, 60 plus is hard to say. Of course, you're going to, if you're a woman, you're likely to outlive your husband by 6 or 7 years. Could be poverty, could be loneliness, isolation, lack of community, lack of family, because everyone just moves for their careers and then the whole family just explodes and erupts and disintegrates. And it really sucks when you get old, because if you don't maintain those relationships, like even family relationships, man, if you don't maintain them, they just become weird and awkward as you get older. It just is. So, you know, let's say that you've lived apart from your kids for, you know, 20, 30 years because, you know, they grew up and then you moved or they moved away or something like that. You can't just, you know, hey, let's just bond and pick it back up again like it was never the case, right? It doesn't happen that way. It's weird. You know, I just take a sort of silly example from my own life. I lost track of a friend of mine. Oh, gosh. It was probably about 8 years ago. And doesn't really matter why. It wasn't my fault, though. But anyway, of course, you see, who doesn't say that? But I lost track of a friend of mine about eight or nine years ago. And about two and a half years ago, I tracked him down and called him up and tried to reconnect. And it was fine. It was a fine conversation. But too much had passed in our lives, and we hadn't stayed in touch. And if you're not staying in touch and getting the updates, you just end up in different places. You just end up in different places. Like if you both painting one half of a painting and you're watching each other's painting, you can meet in the middle and you can have a maybe slightly lopsided unicorn or a clown or whatever you're painting. But if there's a big divide in the middle and you're both just painting your own paintings, they don't match up. Nothing connects, right? So you have to maintain relationships, right? You can't just say, well, you know, I'll check in with you in sort of 5 or 10 years or whatever, right? Yeah, it's wild. You know, And it's the number of visits, not the number of years. So if you see your parents twice a year and they have 10 years left to live, well, you probably only have 18 or 19 visits. Why not 20, you ask? Because the last one is in the hospital. It's not the same as a visit, right? So if you're lucky, right? I mean, unless they just get hit by a bus or die in their sleep or something, but most people have a fairly significant decline. Like half of your entire healthcare expenses over the course of your life are in the last 6 months of life. It's crazy. So I think the women who were older, they did their own thing and they lost track of their relationships and you can't go back. You can't go back. I'm in touch with no one from, gosh, even 15 years ago and back, nobody. Nobody. It's not like I'm hard to find. Anyway. So the claim that female workforce participation, and I'll finish up soon, and I would love to get your thoughts on this or whatever you want to chat about. Female workforce participation up by 75%, but life satisfaction down 200%. So yeah, this is true, the first part anyway. Female workforce participation is up 75% since the 1960s. Now, what is meant by life satisfaction? It can't be self-reported happiness, because that was claimed to be down 83%. It's not clear what down 200% means, unless you're using sort of a minus 10 to plus 10 kind of scale. So, yeah. I mean, if you go from plus 5 to minus 5, that's 200%. So, I don't know. It could be a typo. Maybe life satisfaction is down 20%. That's sort of closer to what we saw before, but it's hard to know. College women report record loneliness and depression, even with OnlyFans, apparently. While reports of loneliness and depression are not at record levels now, it's still very high as a whole. Psychologist Jean Twenge's analysis of U.S. survey data shows depression rates among liberal young women tripled from 15% in the late 2000s to 46% by 2021 to 2022. Now, of course, middle of COVID and all that. That's the highest recorded in the data sets. Social media adoption, ideological factors, COVID. Liberal high school girls saw the sharpest surge with similar patterns extending into young adulthood. Now, if you get captured by ideology, you gain empty companions. You are doomed and fooled into believing that hatred is a virtue, You end up in an echo chamber. You can't reach reality anymore. And your mind, unmoored to basic facts and empiricism and reason, floats off into alienated nothing land. And you cannot be around people who disagree with you. You cannot be coached. You cannot improve. You have all of the answers. And if you can't be affected, you can't be in love. You know, we want to affect each other. I mean, can you imagine? You're some guy and the woman of your dreams, and you're supposed to be dating, and you're like, hey, you want to? Are we getting together on Thursday? And she's like, yeah, if you want to. And she's indifferent. Indifferent. Oh, that's cold, man. Yeah. Oh, you got a thirst to die and live and breathe for that person. My wife leaves the house for 45 minutes and I call her. Are you almost done? You almost done? You coming home? When are you coming home? I mean, I'm standing here in the driveway. It's cold. I need to come home. I always wanted to know that she's wanted, you know, 3% short of stalking. I mean, I tried, obviously it's a ragged line, but you know, full stalking, back 3%. So Gallup panel data 2025 reports the U.S. adult depression rate at historically high 18.3%, up from 10.5% in 2015, with young adults aged 18 to 29 at 26.7%, doubled since 2017, and up from 24.6% in 2023. Women overall have a 36.7% lifetime depression diagnosis rate, nearly double men's 20.4%. And only 15% of young women, 18 to 29, rate their mental health as excellent in 2020 to 2024, down 33 points from 48% in 2001 to 2017, which was a record low for the group. Okay, let's pause to see this absolute Sydney Sweeney faceplant smoking craters of these numbers. Only 15% of young women rate their mental health as excellent, down from 48% in just a couple of years. It's catastrophic. It's a nuclear bomb. It's gone off. And of course, as women have gotten more woke, as they've gotten more anti-male, as they've gotten more anti-capitalist, if they've gotten more obsessed with racism, racialism, and all kinds of phobias and blah, 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 as all of that has happened, women have become progressively more and more miserable. Women need men, men need women. And if women are taught that they don't need men, they go mad. They go, and of course, this is one of the reasons I fight the incel and the women, blah, 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 the negative stuff towards women. Anyway, so that's massive and catastrophic as a whole. All right, so the Healthy Minds Body Study 2024 to 2025 found 37% of women with moderate to severe depression symptoms, down from pandemic highs, but still above pre-2020 levels. Oh, sorry, that's generic. No gender-specific breakdowns in the national report, but prior waves and related studies note women report 1.5 to 2 times higher rates than men. Now, those numbers are certainly higher. Like, indubitably, no question whatsoever. It's only a question of how much higher, and it's not small. Well, why? Because it's hard to imagine that there's somebody who's happy, who complains about being depressed and goes for treatment and does therapy or whatever it is, right? That would be like somebody who's cancer-free going through chemo, right? It wouldn't make any sense. It's a little less extreme, but similar. I mean, so those numbers are the bottom because there aren't people going into that category who aren't in that category or saying we're in that category when they're not in that category. However, there, of course, are people who are depressed, who aren't getting this kind of treatment. So some of it is self-reporting, and I think that's much more accurate. But when you're talking about prescriptions and you're talking about mental health services and so on, when you're talking about your therapy and antidepressants, anti-anxiety meds, or like the medical interventions or the therapeutic interventions, those are the absolute bottom numbers, and it is much higher. In reality, there's all the people who don't go for that help are still depressed. Loneliness. A Gallup poll from 2025 reports 21% of U.S. adults experience significant daily loneliness, the highest since 2021. 29% of young adults aged 18 to 29 affected, higher than any other age group and correlating with their elevated depression. Women report higher loneliness overall. So studies showing 1.5 to double the rate of men in similar demographics. So that is wild. That is wild. So 21% of U.S. adults, if women are 1.5 to 2 times that of men, then women are very high relative to men. It's 21% on average, right? So the women would be like 30%, 35%, maybe even 40%, and the men would be much lower. Yeah, because 40% would be twice. But as I know, it's a bit more complicated. All right. Right at the edge of my math skills, such as they are. A 2024 American Family Survey found 29% of liberal women aged 18 to 40 feel lonely a few times a week or more so. Only 11% of conservative women over 3 times as likely after controls. Elevated, but not explicitly a record, right? So women who are liberal are lonely. And listen, we love the ladies. The ladies bring us life and all good, sparkly, delightful things in the world. But women experience loneliness as a sort of physical pain. Men experience loneliness as an absence. Women experience loneliness as a wound. As a wound. Something that is missing. You know, you ever have it, you lose a tooth and your tongue is just like, hey, there's a gap there. Something's missing, but it's not a pain. Right? So for a man, loneliness is like a tooth missing. It's there, you notice it. But for a woman, loneliness is like a toothache. It's painful. It's hard to bear. Men were evolved to be more solitary than women because hunting and all of that. So the Healthy Minds study from 2024 to 2025 reports 52% of college students with high loneliness, down from 58% in 2022. With women, again, showing higher rates in subgroup analyses. Not a record high, remains still above pre-pandemic norms. I mean, the world is not the same since the pandemic, for sure, right? A 2025 Frontiers study on young students found significant gender differences, with women more likely to report frequent loneliness. For example, only 18.2% of women versus 34.8% of men report never feeling lonely. I don't want to make this about me, but I these sort of things, man, I felt lonely over the course of my life. I don't think so. I have my books and my poetry to protect me. No, I mean, I'm a very active mind. I can almost read or write books. And so I don't think I feel lonely. I've certainly felt like, oh, I want a date or I want to have a girlfriend or something like that. It's similar to lonely, but it's not quite the same. Quite the same word. All right. So 40% of women have engaged in self-harm, ranging from cutting to suicide to watching Joe Rogan. We didn't find this 40% figure in self-harm among women. That said, the numbers we do have are quite shocking. So the non-suicidal self-injury is defined as deliberate self-inflicted harm without suicidal intent. Among U.S. adults, lifetime prevalence is approximately 6%. So a little over 1 in 20, with no significant gender differences in overall rates, though women are more likely to use methods like cutting. For adolescents and young adults, rates are higher, 17 to 20%, with women 1.5 to 2 times more likely than men, showing up as 20.2% for North American female adolescents. 1 in 20 to 1 in 5. That's wild. In college students, lifetime rates range from 17 to 35%. So the higher end of this range is within spitting distance of 40%. So suicide attempts, subset of self-harm with intent to die. The lifetime prevalence among U.S. women is approximately 6.7 to 6.8%. Men are at about 3 to 4%, giving women 1.78 greater odds. Now, of course, we know that women attempt suicide more, men achieve suicide more. Rates are higher among younger women and certain subgroups. So if you have an eating disorder, you have a suicide rate that is much higher. Suicide attempts, 22 to 44%. Bisexual women can be up to 50%. Up to 50% suicide attempts. Combined proportion for self-harm. So if you combine the NSSI and suicide attempts, the overall proportion is not directly tabulated in sources due to overlap. Of course, there is a lot of people who attempt suicide have a history of this non-suicidal cutting. General estimates for lifetime self-harm in the U.S. population, about 17% for adolescents, young adults, 5 to 6% for all adults, suggesting 6 to 10% for U.S. women overall when adjusting for gender disparities. Trends show increasing rates among young females. For example, 50% rise in self-injury emergency visits since 2009, but underreporting is common, potentially underestimating true proportions. Ah, so close to the end. And I get the spastic lips. Spastic Lips, was that the name of my plastic metal punk band? I think it was. These figures are based on self-reported data from surveys like the National Comorbidity Survey Replication and meta-analyses, which may vary due to definitions and sampling. Factors like mental health conditions, trauma, and social pressures contribute to higher rates among women. So if you put this all together and you say, okay, well, women who are single and women who are liberal and all of that and neurotic and so on, what is the prevalence? Very, very high. So that is the challenge. So yeah, women are not doing well. The boys are not doing well and women are not doing well. Men, we're just like tanks. We lumber through everything. But boys and women tend to be the most vulnerable. All right. Let us go to our good friend, Kerry. If you would like to tell us your thoughts, I would be happy to hear. Don't forget to unmute.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm very sensitive and concerned, and I have compassion for the men. I have a 14-year-old son, you know, and I know that it's challenging for the boys right now, as you talk about a lot. But I'm really glad you're talking about the females, because the men and women, especially what I see on X, is you've got the incels over here that are always angry, and they're constantly, women are bad, you know, they only want this, they want that. But not enough people are talking about what the women have grown up in now. You know, you're talking about all the divorces and the single motherhood and everything. And that means there's a lot of girls that grew up without fathers or without good fathers. And that's done a lot of damage. And the mothers may have grown up without a father also at this point, or had a bad father, you know, and there's been so much turmoil between the parents, and even if the dad was around, he wasn't involved. And the girls have kind of been out there on their own, navigating, and no one to protect them or guide them, and especially not in who to date or how to date. So I just think that neither side seeing each other for the damage they both seen.
Right, right. Well, is your son, I mean, don't obviously go into any particular detail, but is your son interested in dating? Are there girls? Is it starting to move? Because it kind of moves early these days. Is it kind of moving in that way for your son?
He's not too interested in dating. He doesn't want to spend his money on girls.
Not when there's new NVIDIA chips coming out. Right.
That's right. He'd rather spend it on Xbox, or, you know, now he's into hunting every day and every night if he can. And he just kind of has his own thing going on there. You know, he's kind of had his heart broken a little bit, you know, liked a girl, and then she dates his friend, and then she wants to come back and date him, and he's not having that. And so he's not too tore up about it or too interested in it, doesn't seem. But I, you know, not so much he's going to tell his mother.
Right, right. They do enter a bit of a secretive phase in the mid-teens, so I get that, I get that. And do you have any daughters, or is it other sons, or?
My daughter is turning 16 this month, and she's getting ready to have a one-year anniversary with her, basically, first boyfriend. She's really picky, and they're doing really well. They go to church twice a week together, and we keep a good eye on him, but he's a good kid.
That's lovely. That's great to hear. So I'm sorry, if I don't want to interrupt and go on some sort of rant here because it's a call-in show. So if you have other things you'd like to mention, I'd be happy to hear.
No, I really, anytime I try to defend women, I'm not trying to attack the men because like I said, I have a son as well. Mm. You know, I could see the challenges, but there's just so much degrading to females and some of it we've earned. But I just think that if we can get some of these guys understanding why the girls maybe aren't wanting to get married young anymore, they do want to. I think they're scared or they've been taught, get your career first, you know, make sure you protect yourself because a man could just walk out or, you know, there's a lot of reasons girls pick the wrong guys and they don't want to get married young and just do the traditional family thing. I mean, if you grew up when your parents got divorced when you were young and you've seen them maybe get divorced more than once or, you know, no, like you talk a lot about, did your dad teach you these things? Did your mom teach you? Did they guide you? That was their number one job. And for a lot of us, no one did. And we were just kind of out there trying to figure out on our own and made mistakes. Or we're terrified to try to do it right. I was listening to that. It's about 2 hours. I haven't got through it yet. The girl who was pregnant and her husband cheated on her, Ron.
Right.
And I'm not quite to the end of how, what you said to her, but, you know, seeing how she was pretty much abused her entire life. Her dad pretty much abandoned her. She made very poor choices in who she lived with and married, but you know, if you can look at her and have compassion and say, well, wow, you made some really serious mistakes there. But if you look at somebody and see their history and how they really didn't have a chance to do it right until they get some help, you know, get through it and figure it out. And like you were asking her, why did you allow yourself in that situation? Who did she have to guide her? Nobody.
Yeah, in call-in shows, it's the sort of cycle I have to remind myself, don't judge till you get the history. Don't judge till you get the history because you get the history and it's like, I mean, still free will and all of that. But, you know, some people start with such a disadvantage that for them to even get, like other people are building skyscrapers and they're just digging their way out of the underworld. And if they get to level ground, it's a massive achievement. So,
right.
Okay. I'm happy to hear more. I don't want to go on a rant yet. There's more.
No, you can rant, please.
Are you sure?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Crash position. Assume the crash position. Well, I think there's two things that men don't understand. One they don't understand at all. The other, they kind of get in an instinctual way. But the one thing is that women are the targets of propaganda. Young women are the targets of propaganda. You know, that sort of famous quote, you know, it was the women and above all the young ones who were the noses out of unorthodoxy and the spies and the tattletales and so on. Women are the transmitters of culture. Men go out and make stuff, and they make culture, men, but the women transmit the culture. I mean, if you're raised a Christian, Christianity is largely transmitted through the mother, the cultural values are largely transmitted through the mother. So if you want to screw up a culture, you target the women and you target the young women. Because young women and women as a whole tend to score higher in the big five trait called agreeableness. They want to get along. They want to agree. It's not a flaw. It's not a weakness in any way, shape, or form. I mean, what's the point of making culture if it can't be transmitted? That would be like writing a beautiful poem on the surface of a lake and watching it just dissolve into ripples. So men make culture in order, again, broadly speaking, men make culture in order for women to transmit that culture, and that's what's built. So if you want to disrupt a culture, you want to destroy a culture, then You target the women, and this is why women have gone so hard left, is that you get the key women or the key girls in the demographic, the key women, and the other women, other girls, other women, all just kind of fall in line, and then your culture is wrecked. Men aren't targeted because we are ridiculously skeptical and rebellious, and I don't mean that as a virtue. It has its strengths and its weaknesses, just as women's strengths also have the weaknesses. We're designed to fit together like jigsaw puzzle pieces and help each other. So, of course, the other thing you have to do in order to exaggerate women's faults and exaggerate men's fault is to separate men from women, which is why you make women jumpy of the patriarchy, right? Because the old saying goes, you know, women think there's a patriarchy because they only look at high status men because low status men don't even exist for them. But women are targeted in this way and to separate from the men, right? So women are more credulous and more conformist. It's fine as long as you have male skepticism to balance it. Men tend to be more rebellious and skeptical, which they need women's traditionally sort of higher trust and conformity to balance, right? It's a yin-yang, and it balances beautifully in a state of nature, you know, without massive trillions of dollars of redirects. So men look at the women, the young men look at the young women going super woke, like they've gone asylum levels of woke. And the gap is only widening, right? And they say, my God, why are these women so woke? And it's like, because they're targeted. It's like the guy, you know, in Dallas in 1962 saying, well, why did his house explode? It's because they're shooting him, not you. He's the one they're trying to kill. So the fact that the propaganda is aimed squarely and directly at women, and it's not accidental, and it's highly planned, and it's highly coordinated, and it is the best minds in the world looking to wreck the West and hashtag and Australia and New Zealand. But so. Men don't even see the bullets. Men don't even see the conformity. Men don't even see the kind of half demonic possession of the female spirit, that the female spirit to replicate culture has been hived off from the man's and is using to replicate woke anti-culture among women. And that destroys the birth rate. It destroys the culture. But men don't understand the degree to which and the amount to which the propaganda is just boom, boom, boom on social media in particular. Like, it's just gone mad. Women are just literally bombarded with this stuff. And I mean, men are susceptible to their own propaganda. Like, nobody needed muscles until Rocky and Schwarzenegger, right? Until the sort of twin icons of abs, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone. Rocky came out, and then Conan stuff, and he's like, I gotta have muscles, right? And it just became, and now, like, man, muscles, this decades later, when, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger looks like a melting wax statue. I don't care. I mean, good for him. I mean, he's still exercising and all of that. Bad for him for banging the maid and all of that. But so the amount of men are not, they don't understand the amount of propaganda. So if you want to know what it's like being more commonsensical among girls, try going among your male friend group and being both gay and super woke. Like, all, like, not mocking it, just absolutely serious. Try tone policing. Try pointing out microaggressions. Try pointing out mansplaining all the time. Be a freaking wet blanket of social doom and see what happens to your male friends. So you try bringing serious woke into boy culture these days, you'll just get laughed at, mocked, attacked, excluded, eyes rolled, dick, you'll never be invited anywhere. You're done. So you got to roll with the constantly edgelord jokes and all. You got to roll with it, right? Not take anything seriously or anything like that. So if you want to know what it's like trying to bring more conservative values to women these days, try to bring more woke values with all seriousness to boyfriends and to your boyfriends, sorry, to your male friends, and you'll see. So that's number one. Number two, and I think boys have more of a sense of this as a whole. So because sexuality has been completely separated from marriage and reproduction, girls have the equivalent, let's say at the age of, I don't know, when does the average age of sexual activity start for teens these days? I don't know, 15, 16, 17. I think it's probably on the lower end of that, but let's just say 15. Let's just say 16. So if a boy were to inherit $1 million on his 16th birthday, he knew it was coming, and he gets $1 million on his 16th birthday, what would his life be like? Well, it would be a bit deranged. In fact, a lot deranged. Now, woman's sexuality is supposed to extract about $1 million from men. because most men will earn about $1 million over the course of their life, and most of it goes to their, you know, 900,000 of that goes to wife and kids. So a woman's sexuality is supposed to extract about $1 million for men, which is why, you know, you see all of these whatever podcast clips where the women are like, I need a guy who makes quarter mil. I need a guy who's got a Lambo and a big boat, a yacht. So whatever it is, right? They come up with all this ludicrous stuff, and you saw all of this stuff in the Kevin Samuels videos where women would say what they wanted, the wish list. And my mom used to have these checklists when she was mad at my dad after they separated. It's like, wait, I'm going to put together all my expenses and send a giant bill to your father and just extract resources. And that's not because women are gold diggers. It's because they need to take care of the kids. And without the kids and people taking care of them, we've got no culture, no life, no continuity, no nothing, right?
Right.
So it used to be that the woman only got the $1 million worth of value out of the man. And please, it's nothing to do with gold digging. It's primarily because our children just take so long to grow up, right? So the price of the $1 million of resources used to be marriage, right? You get married, you start dating mid to late teens, you date for 6 months, you maybe have a 6 month engagement, you get married in your late teens. I mean, it was 20.8 in 1960, so earlier it would have been even younger, right? So you get married in your, and then once you're married, you start having the babies, and the resource extraction machine, the conveyor belt from cleavage to children is underway, right? So now girls get the $1 million extraction devices deployed with no marriage and no children. No marriage, no children. So it's one thing if you get $1 million and you have to invest it. You have to invest it or you don't get anything. Okay, then that's going to limit, right? But if you get $1 million in cash and you don't have to invest it, you don't have to defer anything, you can just spend it all now, you're going to go nuts. You know, a friend of mine when I was younger, his mother died and he got a big inheritance and he just blew it on, like, he bought a Jeep, he bought a computer, like all stuff that lost value. I hate spending money on anything, as you can see by my elaborate set. But I actually took a picture yesterday of my workout gloves, which are like complete tatters, right? But it's like, I don't get new ones. So for women, for girls, they get this absolutely staggering power of resource extraction. And again, it's not gold diggers. It's designed for children. That's you get the $1 million, but you have to have monogamy. The man will pay the $1 million, but it's got to be his kids. You got to be a good mother. You got to transmit his values. You got to have peace in the home. You got to run a good household. So all of this sort of stuff, right?
Right.
So right now, the girls in the West, I mean, white girls or whatever, the girls in the West get $1 million. They can spend it at will, as much as they want. And the boys are all broke, but the girls have $1 million. And that really does bug men. It bugs the boys because it's way, way too disparate, a power setup or a power structure. The girls have all the power. Now, the girls have all of that power because that power is not limited by pregnancy and childbirth and the need for a provider. They can just take this awesome power of, you know, men have 17 times the testosterone, the sex drive is completely mental. And that's to have men pair bond with a woman. Like, I want sex so much, I'll get married and, you know, find a good girl and we'll figure it out and all that kind of stuff, right? So what bothers the boys, I think, sort of, you know, really deep down and in their heart of hearts, it's like, this is crazy. It's weight. And then, of course, in school, not only do the women have, the girls have like $1 million of, and $1 million worth of sexual access that the boys don't have, but also what happens is the teachers all like the girls more than the boys. And the girls get marked way better than the boys, right? You've known about these blind tests where they take the names off and the boys' marks go up considerably. So the girls get upmarked. All of culture is stimulating female vanity to the point of near psychosis. You know, I was talking about this the other night, like all the wives are smart and all the husbands are dumb and all the sisters are smart and all the boys are dumb and all of the secretaries are smart and all of the bosses are dumb and like all the males are dumb and all of the females are. So it's just like, it's just nonstop propaganda, pro women, praise women to the point where women lose their minds. And then, of course, the flattery goes because the boys will lie to girls to have sex, right? Because they don't need marriage or anything, they don't need commitment. And so, and then when the boys try to get into school, preference is being given to the females. And then when the boys try and get a job as well, we've got our diversity quotas, we've got to hire the females. And it's just like, holy crap, this is unfair. And men, we hate unfairness. We hate unfairness of opportunity. We don't hate unfairness of outcome. That's fine. We don't mind if everyone starts in the same place. Some guy's twice as fast a runner. Hey, man, good for him. Be blurry legs all you want, right? Be Usain Bolt on cocaine all you want. But when it's completely unfair, when the women, you know, as the old saying goes, when the women are born on third base and think that they've consistently run, they consistently get home runs, that drives men crazy. Because we're about meritocracy, and meritocracy means everybody gets a shot. And men aren't getting a shot. The boys aren't getting a shot. So the boys look at the girls and the girls' pumped up vanity and sexual subsidy of dating and preferential marks and preferential hiring and preferential education and preferential this. And then they get told, oh, it's a patriarchy. It's like, oh, it's not. It's the opposite. We live in a pure distilled estrogen-based matriarchy. It's like being waterboarded with breast milk from boys. From start to end, it's just, and oh, well, your welfare state. Oh, we got to transfer all the money to women. Oh, all the government jobs got to go to the women. Oh, all the old age pensions, all the health care, it's got to go to the women. Men pour twice as much money into the tax system as they get out. Women get out twice as much from the tax system as they put in. Massive transfer. And they go to the malls. It's all about girls, girls, women, women, girls, girls. Can't find any stores for men. There used to be one lonely Radio Shack in the back, but now it's all cell phones. So it's unfair. And girls have gotten so used to this massive flattery, just this conveyor belt of, it's a whole study of this in psychology called Women, War. Wah, wah, wah. Women are wonderful. Women are wonderful. Women are wonderful. Women are the great. Boys are just broken girls. Women are the ideal. Boys are just, you know, snips and snails and puppy dog's tails, and girls are sugar and spice and all things nice. There's too much power. Too much power has flowed to the women. Too much praise has flowed to the women. Too much sexual, dating, political, economic, institutional diversity. Way too much power has gone to the women. And we men, we do not like to bow down. We do not like to beg. We do not like to flatter. At least, you know, honorable men, like players will say, oh, yeah, baby, you're so wonderful. I'll call you tomorrow, right? But a man with any pride will not beg. I mean, I've had obviously pretty short relationships in the past where the woman sort of demanded praise, right? And, you know, I show appreciation for things, but I also expect appreciation, right? I mean, I had a woman, that was a relationship in my 20s, and I was paying all the bills because she was trying to get into a particular field that was tough to get into. I was paying all the bills, and she was like, well, you're not doing half the housework. And I'm like, well, no, because I'm paying all the bills. There's two of us here. It's an apartment. It's not that much housework. Like, you've got four kids. So she wanted a praise just for doing the housework. I'm like, hey, if you praise me for going to work and paying the bills, I'll praise you for the housework. But if you're not going to praise me for going to work, if you just take for granted the fact that I'm taking half my day and pouring it into your side of the household, if you're not going to give me any appreciation for that, I'm not going to give you any appreciation because you cooked a meal. You know, this is when I was an entrepreneur. I was working like 12, 14, 16 hours a day. Oh, she's been half an hour making a meal. It's like, I'm working 32 times harder sometimes. And you can see this, of course, on X, right? Which is, what do men bring to the table? It's like the fact that there is a table. The fact that a man did the logging and sanded it down and carted it and built the trains and built the trucks and built the sanitation and built the water and built the electricity and built the roads and built the houses and built the Twitter, built the computers, built the typewriter, blah, 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 right? Well, here's a book of women in tech. It's like, yes, there's a book of women in tech and there's a library of men. And then, of course, the women say to me, well, have you done any of those things? It's like, well, coincidentally, unfortunately, I have. But even if I haven't, and I haven't done them all, right? I've never been, what have I never been? I've never been a bricklayer because I don't find bricks sexually attractive. Maybe the mortar. Story for another time. But I've never been a bricklayer. But I appreciate bricklayers because it's kind of nice to have walls. It'd be nicer to have borders, but it's kind of nice to have walls. I appreciate them. Obviously, I pay them a lot, but I appreciate them. Thank you. Thank you for this, you know, tough, boring job. I know, believe it or not, Winston Churchill was a big bricklayer. It was a way that he thought through problems. So, but even if I don't do all these things, I appreciate them. Would you ever do this? You ever just like, hey, I just, if you've ever lived in the woods, you ever lived in the tent for a long period of time, it's kind of tough to get hot water because you don't want to boil it. It's too hot. You got to mix it. And it's like getting just the right temperature, then it cools down. At least a couple of times a week, because I have these sort of memories of living in a prospector's tent, right? For like a year. And I'm like, oh, I can just turn off. And if you've ever had these things break, like every homeowner, right? You have this thing where your water heater breaks and then you got to bathe in the cold and like, this sucks. I don't care if it raises my testosterone. I have little enough hair as it is. But you just appreciate, my God, think of all of the, because when I was in the environmental field, I sold to a lot of, you know, big water treatment plants and companies, and think, okay, there's this dirty water, and it goes through this filtration, it goes through this cleaning, goes through these filters, goes through this zapping to get all the bugs out, it gets transported all the way out here, it gets heated in the basement, and then, bink, little tap, bink, and I get warm water. Ah, glorious. A microwave. Ah, amazing. I got a little on my desk here, I got a little coffee warmer, right? Like $12, and a little coffee warmer. Keeps my coffee warm. So nice. So it's just appreciation. What appreciation do men get? No, women feel entitled. And they don't appreciate what men have done. They've been trained not to appreciate what men have done. So men are like, okay, so if I want to have a girlfriend, I've got to conform to her crazy woke ideology. I have to praise women at all times. I cannot praise men. I cannot defend men. In any conflict between males and females, the woman is automatically right. The man is automatically an asshole. If a woman says to me, oh, every single one of my ex-boyfriends was a total narcissist. It's like, narcissists are like 4 or 5% of the population. How is it that every single ex? So you can't say to a woman, or you can, but I've seen the results of it. But if you say, a woman says, oh, I've had 4 or 5 relationships over the last 6 or 7 years. And you say, oh, what if you learned? What if you learned like that you can do better or better? Hey. Whoa, bro. They were bad guys. It's like, yeah, but you did kind of choose them. they fooled me. Like they're 100% a great actress, Oscar worthy. And you know, whatever. Sorry. Like you can't say, or at least it's tough to say, what if you learned?
Yes, what and their girlfriends are not going to
potentially improve. I mean, it's the equivalent, like for women, if a guy's like, yeah, you know, I've had like, I don't know, 4 or 5 jobs over the last 5 or 6 years, and I get fired every time, or I storm out. I get fired or I storm out. And you say, what have you learned so that you can maybe have a job that lasts more than 6 months? What have you learned? Like, are you picking the wrong places to work? Are you picking the wrong bosses? Are you unable to handle conflict in the workplace? I mean, is there something that you've learned? Whoa, hey, all my bosses turned out to be like completely closeted narcissists, and you should know that. Not my fault at all. Okay, for a woman, would you want to trust a guy who'd had 5 or 10 jobs, none of them lasted more than a year, maybe two, fired, quit, stormed out, ugly endings every single time, and he'd learned nothing, nothing. He'd learned nothing. Blamed his bosses, blamed the environment, blamed the customer, blamed the economy, blamed this, blamed that, nothing. Would you quit your job and be his concubine and make babies? Probably not, right?
But
and men, women can say, here's my list of expectations because I have standards. Great, good, great, have standards. Wonderful. Then a man puts forward his list of standards. Ah, oh, so objectifying, so controlling, right? I mean, if he doesn't want me to go to a club half naked, he's just insecure and controlling.
For sure.
Right. Right. You want him going to a strip club? Anyway, we know all this sort of stuff. So it is frustrating. And the incel stuff, I mean, the incels are looked as weak. I don't think that's the case. Obviously, it's a spectrum. But I think what's more accurate is to say that the incels won't bow, scrape, worm tongue, and prostrate themselves before insanely pumped up female vanity. And again, I'm not blaming the women. I can't imagine what it would be like. I can't imagine, and I live with two attractive females, and their life is very different from mine. And I'm not a huge troll or anything like that, but it's just not the same. I can't imagine the only way that I can get men to understand this, the only way I can understand what it's like for women in the modern West is to imagine that I was born a king. It's good to be king, right? If I was born a king, everybody was scared of me. Everybody praised me. Everybody deferred to me. Everybody said everything I did was wonderful. I would go insane with megalomaniacal narcissism and vainglorious self-puffery, right?
I hadn't thought
or
about...
Or if I was the son of a celebrity who was a billionaire and he gave me huge... And I was going to inherit a $5 million on my 16th birthday. People would never be able to be honest with you. People would never be able to be direct with you. You know, like the woman I dated who said she was psychic. She was just psychic. She just had these things. I shouldn't, it's not all women speak like that, but they do in my head, except for my wife and daughter and female friends. But she's like, oh, yeah, I'm psychic. And I'm like, I know you're not. No, you're not. I mean, come on. I mean, it's fun and it's, you know, they're parlor games and it's kind of clever and all of that, but you're not psychic. I am. How would you, why wouldn't you, why, how dare you say that? Well, because if you're psychic, then you can go get $1 million. Because there's a guy in Vegas, he'll give you $1 million. It doesn't work that way. It's like, well, then how do you know it works at all? If you can't possibly test it, how do you know it works? And, you know, it's like the astrology thing. It's like, no, the position of the stars, like 300 light years away, totally determine your personality. And it's like, no, it doesn't. No, they don't. Nope. There's no such thing as astrology. Oh, that's nonsense. I mean, it's fun, it's clever, but no. And you can't, if you say that kind of stuff, women get offended because it's saying to the king, you're wrong. Yeah, you're wrong. No, your paintings really aren't that good. People just say that because you're the king. And so for women to understand that, imagine that you are... a courtier in King Lear's court, right? You go see the play King Lear, right? The only person who can tell the king the truth is a joker, is a clown, is the fool. You know, men know a lot. We know a lot. Women know a lot too, and women know stuff that men don't know, but guys, we know a lot of stuff. Like, you know, that old meme is like, how is it possible that my husband knows everything about the economy and crypto and prices and manufacturing and how to fix a car, but he doesn't know when I'm upset. We have a lot. And of course, the whole concept of mansplaining was invented so that women would not take men's feedback. I'm talking here, right? It's a one-way street. And like, if women won't take feedback, then they're no fun to date. Just as if men don't take feedback, they're no fun to date. So I think there's a lot of incels who are like, nah, I'm not going to emasculate myself on the altar of female vanity. I would rather be alone than with a vainglorious woman. Now, of course, I'm not saying all women are vainglorious, blah, blah, blah. But a lot, especially the sort of increase. Leftism is just vanity. Leftism is just easy, stupid answers that feel right are the truth. It's vanity. It's a religion. It's a cult. But it's a cult without any responsibilities other than blank hatred at anyone who questions the cult, which is kind of how you know a cult. So, yeah. And then, of course, by the time, you know, as the old saying goes, women are born wealthy and grow poor in terms of sexual market value. Men are grown poor and become wealthy over time. And when that crossover happens, I would much rather be a man in the modern culture, because for men, the human soul can survive almost everything except excessive praise. You can survive abuse, neglect, you can survive hunger, thirst, poverty, but excessive praise is just about the most toxic substance known to man, because it renders you immune. It's be kind of like if the universe entirely conspired to make you think you were slender when you were in fact 400 pounds, you'd never lose weight. I don't need to lose weight. Like the mirror, the clothing, everything. You look down, you see it all fine. It's really brutal. All right. Thank you for your patience. Is there anything you wanted to add, Carrie?
Just real quick. I hadn't thought about the choice that the guys have to make now. It's either the girls that are overly praised, they do no wrong, they have their friends to, you know, prop them up anytime a guy does something wrong, or they have the damaged girls. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. But even the damaged girls have been praised to the point where they don't take much feedback.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, we all have to humble ourselves to something in order to be human. Otherwise, we put ourselves forward as gods who can't be corrected, and you can't have a relationship with a god.
My poor son.
Well, no, you just have to filter. You just have to filter. Knowing what to filter for is the whole thing, so you don't waste time pursuing people who aren't right. Especially if you guys are going to church, he'll hopefully find a humble... let's not even get into what Christianity and feminism have merged to produce this kind of abomination of a lot of modern American Christianity. I mean, when was the last time in your church that the priest ever told women that they have to subjugate themselves to their husbands and all of their responsibilities to their husbands? My God, you can't... I've been to a bunch of churches, both in America and in Canada. You just get... What are the women corrected on? What are the women brought up short on? What responsibilities are placed? It's all like men's responsibilities, and you got to do this and you got to do that. And women will be told to have a closer relationship with Jesus or with God, but I've never heard of or seen a sermon which says you must subjugate yourself to your husband and serve him as the head of the household. Good luck. Maybe it happens in your church. I don't see it.
Rarely.
But it does happen, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good. All right. Okay, well, I appreciate that. And I give you these things not to give you any kind of despair, but just to say that it is risky and dangerous out there, and you need to know what it is that you're looking for so that you're not surprised when foreseeable wrongs occur, things that you can avoid, right? Okay, sorry, let me just get back to this. Let the next person in. Thank you for great questions, as always. Jay Wood, if you would like to unmute. God, now everything's gone. Are you with me? All right, Jay Wood, going once, going twice. Yes, no, yes, no. It looks to be not the case. All right, MC Wallace, if you want to unmute, I would be happy to hear. Going once, going twice. Come on, baby. Take a chance on me. Yes, how's it going?
Doing well.
Are you MC?
I'm MC. Yeah,
okay, let me just dump the other guy so he doesn't start unmuting and saying, hey, I'm here. because I don't want to dump the wrong person I did that the other day. So,
oh, sure.
Give me just a sec. Yeah, so go ahead.
So how I see it is the, for me, I think the epicenter.
Oh, I just did that again, didn't I? Okay, no problem. I'm sorry about that. I won't touch anything. Just go for it. Sorry about that. But unmute. And you said you were just saying that the epicenter. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
No problem. To me, it seems the epicenter of the problem is the universities and, you know, coaching women to get educated, which would be for a career, not for a job, but for a career. And then how I see it is that basically everyone in society, except for your father, your future husband, want you to stay single. So for example, as a man who graduates college and you're starting a career, your boss wants you to get married. He wants you to have 5 kids. He knows you're going to be more reliable. And for the woman, your boss, if you have a career, not a job, like you're an attorney, they don't want you to get married, have kids. They want you to delay all that. And so for me, it really starts at the universities promoting that lifestyle. And so that what they need to do is they need to convince women that they shouldn't have a man. Like, that's the first thing they need to convince them of to get them more interested in improving their independence. And kind of last point on this here. I'll just kind of like have that so far. Do you see that is the center of the problem in society, as far as an institution goes?
Well, but I mean, certainly the universities are a very sort of obvious part of it, but I think it starts all the way back into kindergarten. It starts all the way back all the kindergarten. I was the only male in the kindergarten, and it was a pretty big place. I was the only male there, and I was the first male there for a while. So, of course, all the boys were like glomming on to be as like pseudo dad and all of that. So it starts really early. It starts really early in that it's all females that are authority figures. And a boy, certainly if he grows up without a father, and even fathers within the home have a tough time being authority figures because they're scared of divorce. They're scared of the look. They're scared of, you know, this absolutely bullcrap statement like, happy wife, happy life. It's like, that's like a hostage taking or something like that, you know? Better not piss me off or I'm going to destroy the family's finances to the tune of $500,000 by divorcing you. And so a lot of men are cucked in the relationship and, you know, all the daycare teachers are women, the primary school teachers are women, and a boy might not get to, he might, until he's sort of middle junior high, he might be 10, 11, 12, 13 years old before he sees any kind of male authority figure. And even that male authority figure has to defer to the girls because, I mean, I saw this, I don't know if it's changed, but I saw this, like that the girl would come in and she would cry because she wasn't there for the test. And she would claim, you know, some sort of woman's issue or some sort of girl's issue. And I mean, what are the male teachers going to do? Okay, right? You don't get those excuses when you are a male. So certainly the universities are part of it, but it starts a lot earlier than that, if that makes sense. Or at least that's my argument.
Well, it does, but, and I wouldn't disagree with you, but it's all funneled towards the universities. Like if you're a smart kid in kindergarten, then you'll do well in elementary and then middle school. And it's all to eventually prepare you as an adult. See, the question is like, once you're adult, what are you going to do? Are you going to get a job or are you going to get a career? When you start working at 18 years old, you have a job. When you start going to college and you have debt for the next 4 years, you're working towards a career. And so that's what I'm saying is the big difference is when women find jobs versus careers. Of course, children, like once a woman decides she wants children, everything changes. That'll be the next thing I would say is really important. So they'll be with a deadbeat. One reason they'll be with a deadbeat is because they can be in a relationship for 4 years with a deadbeat, reflect on the relationship and say, no, I didn't give him kids. He never would have been a good father. It's like, oh, isn't that convenient?
So no, but he's a high status deadbeat, right? So he's got to be a dangerous, tall, good-looking bad boy with a motorcycle. And like, he can't be a deadbeat like who's homeless, right? So he's got to be high status in some way. Sorry, right. Go ahead.
But no, I wouldn't disagree with you there either. He needs to be high status. But however, if they decided that they want children, then they're going to look at the guy on date one and go, are you in a position to take care of children? Do you have a job? Do you have an income? Are you reliable? Can I trust you? So I think that that makes the biggest decision of, you know, like, and think about it, like women are told that their duty, you know, if you're a Christian, your duty is to bear children. That's like number one priority in life as a woman. The left, the universities have convinced women that they're actually doing their duty to society by not having children because they're overpopulating the planet, you know?
Well, and, women's hypergamy, that a woman wants a man who's above her. She wants a man who's taller. She wants a man who makes more money. She wants a man maybe who's better educated. She wants a man with a more successful career. She wants a man who's better than her.
Only educated women feel this way. I mean, not literally only, but disproportionately, it's the educated women that feel this way. So what you find, like, you're a big statistics person, what you find in the 50s and the 60s, that they married for provisions. If you could pay the bills, they're like, I'm good. And that would be like 80-90% of women.
The guy has more income than her.
That's my point. If you have a job, not a career, you're
Hang on. I mean, I don't know if you're right. I haven't seen the data on this. Hypergamy is baked into female nature, and it's good. Because it saying you want a man who's better means that there's a goal for men to strive.
If you
right?
make 20 grand a year,
There's a goal for men to strive for, because the more successful you are, the higher quality woman you generally can get, right? If you're the quarterback and, you know, the captain of the football team and you are president of the debating club, then you're probably going to get the cheerleader, you're going to get whatever, right? So the women wanting the top tier men is why men strive. It's why we don't live in caves anymore. It's a beautiful thing. When you tell women you got to go and be educated, let's say a woman has a master's degree, well, only 10% of guys have master's degrees. So if she has a master's degree, she's probably not going to date a high school guy. Well, she's certainly not going to date a high school guy. She's less likely to date a guy just with an undergrad. She wants a guy with a master's or preferably a PhD. I have a master, he has a PhD. That's a higher status. And so women's education is the most central correlate between higher women's education, lower childbirth, higher women's education. And it's not just the deferral of childbearing years and so on. It's because the more you educate women, the more they want guys who are more educated, and therefore the pool of available men declines. And when the pool of available men declines, then men can sleep with a lot of women, because when you're in demand, like, you know, Steven Tyler in his prime or Mick Jagger or whatever, they don't just marry some woman, they sleep around, because they're in very, very high demand by the groupies. And so when you get women at higher education, you have a large number of women chasing a small number of men, which means the men are going to sleep around. And that's why feminism takes its particular root in university and in among the more educated women, because they won't settle for a guy beneath them. And because there's so few guys above them, those guys can sleep around. And then they say, well, all men are dogs and unreliable. And it's like, well, that's because you priced yourself out of the market. All right. I think he's gone. Maybe he came, maybe he went. Let me just, there've been a bunch of comments just while we wait for, J Woods. Let's try MC again. MC? No. J Wood. All right. J Woods, if you want to come back in, I don't know if you've got your tech issues sorted. Your tech issues are sorted. What have we got here? Let's get to the comments from here. K, Special K. I know who that is. I have a question. I have custody of my 18-year-old sister, and she has a 19-year-old boyfriend, and she's mad at me because I won't let him sleep over. She has a job and finished high school. Should I let him sleep over or not? I don't know. Do you have custody if she's 18? Isn't she a legal adult by 18? Is it because they're not married? If they were married, would you let him sleep over? So if she's finished high school, she has a job, she's a legal adult. I don't know that it makes too much sense. Again, if you have religious objections and you need them to be married, that's a different matter. But I would have a tough time saying no to that as a whole. She says, oh yeah, with loneliness, it feels like you're dying. Yeah. We've all seen men leave their families, so we're scared of relying on men collectively. Ah, yes, but, how do you know the man left the family? Because a lot of times, the woman tends to be a little bit more vengeful in divorce. And so she will say a whole bunch of stuff about the man, a whole bunch of negative stuff about the man. And what can the man say? So let's say the woman cheats, and then she says, well, he just left for no reason, right? Well, what can the man say to the kids? No, your mom cheated. No, because lawyers and hellfire and, right, all that kind of stuff as well. So. Yeah, girl power raised to take over the world. Girls run the world. It's like, blah, 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 yeah. The propaganda is unreal, she says, particularly on TikTok. Yeah, yeah. I'm still trying to untangle myself from the propaganda. It's literally an exorcism-level extraction. What a great way to put it. An exorcism-level extraction. Quite right. Quite right. Somebody says, Canada is the picture of what happens when you take your eyes off the children. The rat and weasel keep female flags and flags undercover while anyone speaks. You're labeled for what there are. Sorry, that's a bit of a word salad. I didn't quite get that. Oh, yeah, with regards to spending the movie with Richard Pryor, Brewster's Millions. Oh, is it remade with someone too? He has to spend everything in order to get an inheritance, but he also can't tell anyone about it. So he looks utterly deranged. Yeah, yeah, true. True. How can modern relationships rebalance when women have all the power? Is it even possible? Sure, you can deny power. I mean, I'm a father. I think you're a mother. Yeah, you're a mother. And you have to deny a power over your children. My wife and I are both embedded. We both have massive power over each other, and that if we left, it would be disastrous for both of us. So you just have to, not that I ever want to or anything like that, but you just have to say no to power. You just have to, I mean, people will offer you power all the time, and your ego and your vanity, like my ego and my vanity, will want that power. And you just have to, nope, get thee behind me, Satan. She says, my stepmother always said men were just women that got damaged by testosterone, and she was an evangelical Christian. Well, I would say not very Christian at all. At all. Women have 5 IQ points low on average, according to Richard Lynn. I've heard a lot. I mean, if Richard Lynn is the expert, but I've heard a lot of different things about that sort of stuff. The lady says... Kay says, my ex-husband told me he doesn't care if I sleep with other men as long as I didn't leave and he could do whatever he wanted, basically polyamory. It was heartbreaking for me. My fault, though. I'm so sorry. That's very, very sad. That's very sad. He cheated and I was like begging him to choose me. Ugh. I'm so sorry. That's very, very tough. Toxic positivity, it's a thing. Yes, yes, it is. Yes, it is. The churches here have women leaders and preachers. Yeah, I went to a Canadian church and it started with this big apology and dedication to the native land. And we're so sorry. It's like you brought Christianity to the godless heathen, giving them access to heaven. What would you apologize for? Again, it's just, yeah. Okay, says my local pastor had an affair with my friend and then she moved away and I can't go to that church anymore. Oof. Oof. It's the entertainment industry. That's the first wave of propaganda that targets children. Yeah, when my daughter was young, we watched no modern shows. Like, I would not at all have modern shows there. I'd rather send her to a leper colony than have her exposed to Disney Plus. All women want a man that's better than her. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now, when she's younger, it's often if he's hotter. Right? But when she gets older and when she has less leverage, she wants more, right? This is the problem. When you have less value and you want more, that's the big challenge for women in their 30s, right? Because you're older, you can't, and especially if you have kids, right? You're older and you've had your history, you've had your trauma, you've had your damage, you've had your bad relationships, and you have a less fertility window ahead of you for a guy who wants kids. And so the woman in her 20s who'll date the sexy loser, very unbalanced, right? But then when she's like, oh my God, I'm in my 30s, I've got to settle down, then she cranks up. She cranks all the way up her list of requirements at the time when every man who meets those requirements wants a younger woman who's less traumatized, right? I mean, he may be traumatized too, in which case maybe there's a fit, but it's not a pretty picture. All right. Well, listen, guys, thank you for a wonderful evening. I have a call in tonight. I have a big day's work.
Sorry.
Yes, sir.
Stefan, I was hoping to speak with you. Just ask you a quick question. I don't have bad connections, but really enjoy what you said. I agree 99.9% of everything you said. Let me ask one question before you leave, and I'll just drop down a listener, but I just want to ask you this one question. Even though we agree on 99.999%, and I can't improve upon what you said it very eloquently and explained it very well. Is there a way, in your opinion, to fix society?
Sure.
Because I know about women's hypergamy, and I've heard everybody speak about that, and I've studied it, you know, at length and ad nauseum. What can be done to fix this problem we have with the hoflation, with damaged women, with the church and its cuckery? Is there a way to fix this? Is there a solution? I mean, I need to know, in your opinion, what can be done? I mean, if Tom Brady gets cheated on, you know, if what can we do?
Well, I mean, I'm gonna do I have your permission to swear? I don't want to shock anyone.
Please, I need honesty, candid. Please.
Well, the analogy would be if you have an entire town addicted to drugs, you kill the fucking dealer or drive him out. You kill the dealer. Kill the fucking dealer. Now, this is just an analogy. What I mean is question and oppose the moral legitimacy of the mass forced transfer of wealth achieved through the state. Thou shalt not steal. The wages of sin is death. All of this female superiority hysteria is subsidized to the tunes of trillions of stolen dollars per country per year. That's it. So either we reject the idea that there are a godlike group of people who can have the power to type whatever they want into their own bank account, but will never be corrupted by it, but only ever do perfectly good, wonderful things because they're angels, because we all know that only the most moral people seek infinite power over others. So either we reject that system, go for Bitcoin, go for gold currency, something that you can't just print and make up out of thin air, and we say voluntary charity is the only moral way to help people. This coerced, money printed, borrowed against the future productivity of our unborn is evil to the fucking core. It is evil to the core. There's a reason why it says, thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not steal. Now, we either do it voluntarily or the system goes bankrupt. We either have a soft landing or a hard landing. We are having a landing either way, because math is math, and whatever mathematically cannot continue will not continue. So female vanity is subsidized, is a government program subsidized off the earnings of the unborn and the excess labor of men. But because it is forcibly transferred, women don't have to appreciate it or respect it in the same way that masters don't respect their slaves or appreciate them. Oh, good job, right? So we just have to reject the moral corruption and evil that characterizes so much of our society. And we have to return to the basic UPB Christian values, thou shalt not steal. If you want help from people, you have to ask. You cannot force them, or you are an evil person. So I hope that helps, and I appreciate everyone's time tonight. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. I will see you guys for Sunday morning, 11 a.m. We will do, and I'll get it right this time, we will do our subscriber-only shows. So freedomain.com/donate to subscribe. You can join to those shows. They mostly don't go out to the public. And we usually have a poll at the end if we can. So thanks, everyone. Great to see you, Kay. Thank you for a lovely stream. I love you guys so much. Have a great night. We'll talk soon.